Most people think that founders and VCs have a one-way relationship of gyan, that the VC gives gyan to the founder. I have over here one of my very, very dear founders. He doesn't give me gyan, I actually seek it out.
When I was in VC Eerily, every VC I met said, what are you doing in VC? You should be a founder.
At least the entrepreneur I know, I think you're very sure of what you want.
You're on a journey to discover yourself. I still think I am on this journey. I know much more about what I want than what I knew 10 years back.
We promised people no one way gyan, so we must take the first question. Hi, I'm Avnish Bajaj and welcome to Unstarted, our new Z47 Moments podcast series about everything related to startups. Whether you have started or you are yet unstarted, before or after. What is unique about this series is that it is for you, it is by founders, for founders. Also, we don't just want to celebrate the well-known successes here, but also the failures, not just the joy, but also the sorrow, not just the ambition, but also the despair. This series cannot be successful and cannot achieve its objective unless we continue to receive the type of questions that we have been getting from all of you. So first of all, thank you. We have received some great videos, some good questions from text. We have received questions in every language. So we look forward to receiving a lot more. Please use the link given in this post for sending those. We will invite people from the ecosystem, all sorts of people and from all walks of life, to help answer these questions. And definitely not only those with feathers in their cap, but also scars on their back. Because what is a startup journey if not always day zero? With that, let's unstart. I am very excited today to invite a very special founder on this episode of Unstarted. Most people think that founders and VCs have a one-way relationship of gyan, where the VC gives gyan to the founder. I have over here one of my very, very dear founders. He doesn't give me gyan, I actually seek it out. So welcome, Mr. Revant Bhatte of Mosaic Wellness. You would know some of the brands of the company, Man Matters, Bodywise, Little Joy. So Revant, really good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
As you are aware, both you and I are very, very excited. You've been an angel investor for a long time also. So this association with founders has always been very natural. And this is a show about that association. So thank you for taking the time. Your background, for people's benefit, University of Mumbai, computer science engineer, IIM Kozhikode MBA, probably every other role that I can think of you have done. You were a software engineer, you were a banker, you have been an operator, you built a very well-known biryani brand at Rebel Foods, and then you started up. This is a very, very interesting journey. As we have gotten questions from the audience, what we have learned or realized is many people think about their life journey and think about, are they ready to start? So what is the theme that goes through this life journey?
You missed one part. I was a VC also in between.
Yes.
For 2 years.
Yes.
To be fair, I think, see, life just happened. I get this question a lot from my team as well, which is we want to emulate a path of people we see today as successful. And it seems like a very age-old gyan that find your own path. But honestly, if I look at last 20 years for me, it was just largely serendipity. Or I would say a little bit of me following some people or some people's advice. Computer science happened because in the end, that was what was the cool thing to do in 2005. And my parents said, you're going to do some graduation. I said, okay, let's do this. When I was in my first job as a software engineer, I then met my today co-founder, Dhyanesh, who was in the same, and he was going in for his MBA, and he said, you are talented, go do an MBA. I went to an MBA, and most people, banks were the best job, so I got that. In that place, I met Kashyap of Rainmaker or Abhishek of GM, who were then at Yes Bank, and they moved to Elara, they said, why don't you come over? So a lot of these decisions in my life were either following people or generally people telling me, hey, you're good at this, why don't you do this? In fact, VC also happened that way. In Rebel, I did 3 different roles. All of them was because the org needed me to do something. When I was in VC eerily, every VC I met said, what are you doing in VC? You should be a founder. And I realized that I was too dumb for too long to not realize that, you know, people were always guiding me in a certain way. And since 2016, I think it was 4 years of continuously people telling me that, you know, you should be an entrepreneur, that I finally decided to take the plunge. Now, why didn't I do it before? I'm also not really sure.
We'll come back to that, Raymond, but this is a very interesting, different story than one would normally hear about an entrepreneur being extremely clear from day one, which many of them ask. But it sounds like for you, you say it has been serendipity. At least the entrepreneur I know, I think you're very sure of what you want. So how was that journey along the way where people are telling you what to do? There must have been some theme about those people. Were they people you really trusted? You said maybe people you look up. Like, how did that happen?
So I think...
You never listened to me. So so how did that go?
No, that's not true. For anyone else listening, it's hard not to listen to Avi. But you're right. You know, if I go back... I think the common pattern was, see, there are people who are in great positions. Let's say you're managing director somewhere. Like, for example, I had board members who I shared a board with when I was a VC, who used to tell me that, oh, you are so great with founders, or you know, the founders look up to you. Or I had founders who would tell me, why don't you leave VC and become my co-founder? Or other VCs they were GPs at other large firms, right? So you'd start thinking about it. Like, the first person to tell me this in 2016 was Kunal. So when I was about to join VC, I was also talking to him and he said, don't do VC, you're an entrepreneur. So these are people who had effectively, what again for me would be successful or would have the right elements of success, right? So for example, if I go way back to 2006 when Dhyanesh was going into IIM Ahmedabad, for us who were all, you know, young undergrads saying, oh wow, you got into IIM Ahmedabad, and for him to say that, you know, you are talented, I'll say, okay, great, I should listen to this person.
Yeah. Right?
So you would listen to people who you would feel that maybe they have the answer. And I think that's what is happening when young people ask us, hey, what is the path?
Yeah.
I think the contexts are very different. I'm not saying that all of them were right or all of them were wrong. I think the path that I got onto just gave me different experiences. But coming back to your point of me being sure as an entrepreneur, once I decided I had to be an entrepreneur, then I had to be very sure what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So the surety of what I wanted to do in entrepreneurship, that I have super high conviction. I don't listen to anybody. You're right. You guys always give me a little advice that why don't you think about this? And I'm like, mujhe ye karna.
Yeah.
But that was after I decided to become an entrepreneur versus, I mean, I think Sashank says this well, right? There are missionary entrepreneurs and there are other kinds of entrepreneurs. I would not call myself a mercenary. I think the mission is very clear.
Yeah.
But I don't think... You know, I've been thinking about this problem statement for the last 20 years.
Nahin.
When I decided to become an entrepreneur, I said, okay, what is a problem statement that I would love to solve for the next 25 years? And then I'm going about it in that manner, right?
But you know, I think for connecting all of this, as listening to you, what comes together for me is, you were actually always increasing your surface area. Every experience is different. There is computer science, then there's software engineering, then there's banking, there's MBA. You are constantly and extremely open-minded. Now, extremely open-minded, I see even now in your journey.
Yes.
And I think what I hear is, you know, we all get a lot of input from a lot of people. And then there is the input that just lands for you. And I think what I have, hearing your journey realize and probably actionable for people is, always trying new things and being willing to, until you suddenly it all comes together.
I think the answer lies in discovering yourself a little. And it seems like I have got this in hindsight, which is true, is you're always on a discovery, you're on a journey to discover yourself. I still think I am on this journey. I know much more about what I want than what I knew 10 years back. I think that's the biggest problem. If I ask a 24-year-old today, they seem to be very sure about what they want. But actually, they have no clue. Because at the age of 21, my parents told me, you have to do an undergrad degree.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing that happens with every 21-year-old today, that, oh, you have to go into these large organizations. Now, let's take a very classical example of any tier one consulting firm. There, the top people would get into VC. Then the top people would get into Harvard, Wharton, or Stanford. Then the top people would again get into VCPE. Now, you can keep following this path, but at some point of time, you have to grow up and ask yourself, what do I really want?
Yeah.
And that purpose is very hard to define. I still don't, I mean, it took me 2 years of leadership coaching after I started my entrepreneurship journey in year three, year four, after feedback from well-wishers like you that, Rivanth, you need to get a coach. To at least articulate better on what really drives you.
Yeah.
And I think the answer is very hard to get. But I think most young people fail to acknowledge that it's the journey that is fun.
Yeah.
And that open-mindedness has to come from the fact that you're still on that journey.
Yeah.
Life is a journey of just discovering oneself. I think careers are like that. The moment we start mixing the two, see, this is a very emotional part of ourselves. Now, you put the functional part saying, okay, best job, day zero placement. This is what my parents will respect. This is what my friends will respect. This is what my future spouse will respect. Or this is what people say is the best thing to do. And then there is what you want really yourself. I think I was always very clear that I'm okay not knowing what I want. I will go with the flow. It's only when I became an entrepreneur and after 3 or 4 years after that, where at least I had a board of advisors like yourself who said, you need to find this answer because you can't. I think it's the right thing for the investors as well to know that, yeah, what drives this person? Otherwise, it becomes a little unpredictable, yeah. Right?
No, you want entrepreneurs. You're also on a 10 to 20 year journey, right? So if it is, so for example, my own, both my first two bosses told me to become an entrepreneur. You know why? Because I wouldn't listen to them. Now, that's not a good reason to become an entrepreneur. They're like, you don't listen. So that's not sustainable as a motivator.
I thought, by the way, it was similar for me. If you look at all the roles I've done, I think I was a terrible employee.
Yeah.
But I think that's a very easy attribution for people to make.
Correct.
There is a deeper answer to why someone is a terrible employee.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, society needs you to behave in a certain way, like McKinsey or Goldman would want you to behave in a certain way. And naturally, some people would resist. I think now with Gen Z, people have realized that, you know, this is the natural way of things. You need to be more open-minded. I think we grew up in a generation where it was workplaces were not that open-minded in that sense. But I think the flip side of that is that extreme open-mindedness is also leading to a plethora of choice, and it's just confusing people.
Yeah.
Like we didn't have choices because, you know, this is what you had to do. And you were okay with it.
No, I have 18,
so it's a tough world. It's a much tougher world.
18, 19-year-olds telling me I don't want to work for anybody. I'm like, how have you reached that conclusion? Mm. You have not yet gone through that path.
Yeah.
Anyway, we promised people no one-way gyan. So we must take the first question, which actually picks up from where I interrupted you on how you thought about your journey. From becoming a VC to the operator and, you know, everything else that comes with it.
Cool. I've been a VC for the past 5 years. I'm debating whether operating experience is a perquisite for starting my own company. Is it better to gain hands-on operating exposure or take the plunge now? Additionally, how does one consciously shift from a VC mindset of skepticism?
I think this last one is very
interesting. Founder mindset of conviction and belief. I do. In fact, when I was a VC, a lot of people used to tell me I should be an entrepreneur, but as an entrepreneur, a lot of people tell me that, hey, you would make a great VC as well. And
you've had a great angel portfolio of investments.
I mean, time will tell.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. In my view, early stage venture is no different from entrepreneurship because effectively you're taking a punt on people. You're taking a punt on people and there is a power law in the fact that there would be 5 or 10 individuals in at least the last 6 years that I've been running this business, and I'm sure the next 20 years that's going to come true as well. That small percentage of people will have a massive effect on the outcome of this company. I mean, everybody's doing a great job. We are all trying hard, but there will be a power law where 8, 10, 20 individuals will have an asymmetric outcome for or create that outcome for the company. which is similar to what venture is. And it's identifying those people and enabling them and grooming them to actually succeed is where I find the similarities. So for me, I realized that's the fun part of entrepreneurship. I really, really enjoy identifying people who have talent or potential talent, and can I unlock that a little, right? And that's where I would say, like, I get energy from people. That's so that
betting,
I've understood.
Betting on people is similar between VC and operating.
Yeah, and I like the word you use, which is increased surface area of luck, also comes from thinking a little expansionist, right? Like, what would the future look like? And taking that punt. I'm not very, I mean, you've known this as a board member, that risk is something that doesn't fall into a lot of my equations. So I think if you combine those two, I don't think it's that different. I think the best VCs are hardly skeptics. The best VCs take punts on.
Have to believe in reward.
Have to believe also in the fact that what will the world look like 10 years from now? Because in the end, your 100x outcome is going to happen because a version of the world that will exist 10 years later does not exist today. And you believe that here is a person in front of me who's going to make that a reality. So it may seem to you that you are a skeptic, because in the end, when there's a discussion, and in the end, we see, let's say, 2,000 companies in a year and only invest in, let's say, two or three. And there's a lot of debate going around saying that why will this not work? You may feel that that's skepticism, but that's just maybe you learning risk in some way or
in
form.
A good way.
In a good way.
I think if you are a VC starting out, you will think of the unknowns that founders will never. And in some ways, that's a good balance, as long as it doesn't take away your reward mindset.
Also, a nuance I may give is, I'm assuming this person is an associate or a VP in a firm. Usually, you are seeing the risk side of it, because it takes a little bit of time in a venture firm for you to get the tap on the shoulder to say, go take your punt, right? Yeah. And you're seeing your principals and partners take that punt. In the end, it's not that they know any better. It's just that they have an intuitive feeling that this is the founder, or this is the team, and this is the market that we would like to see that this play out in. And I'm not saying in any way that, you know, principals or partners are effectively, you know, taking punts, but it's honestly that no one knows, right? And it takes years and years of conditioning, in my view, for someone to learn how to do this better and better. And you are in that process. So I think the big difference is, if you try and become an entrepreneur today, or even try and become an operator today, you will today get an opportunity to take those punts sooner than what you are maybe seeing in a venture system.
But what about the first part? Should they go get operating experience?
I just
assuming
think it's learning.
Assuming no operating experience prior, let's say, like you said, post MBA, associate, VP, should they before starting their own company?
I think the only success factor, in my view, I really believe in entrepreneurship, is timing and resilience. So if the time is right, you believe the market is right, I don't think you should wait. Resilience is something you have to build, and resilience comes from purpose. If you are really clear that you are willing to fight it out for the next 15, 20 years, and you really believe in that version of future and the timing is right now, I don't think anything should stop you from getting there. I mean, that's my limited point of view on this.
So, largely agree, especially on the timing. I think what I have observed, because we have backed many VCs turned entrepreneurs, your potentially, so I agree with you, as a VC, you probably, coming from a VC background into entrepreneurship, you probably do a better job of stacking odds in your favor by thinking through risk, reward, everything. The run fast and break things, and how many mistakes you make in operating. If you had 1 year experience under someone like a Revanth, you know, I've advised people to go get trained under you, because I actually believe that if you are able to, very specific type of operating experience can help. And that is, in my view, not even Series C+. Join a Series A, Series B company like a COS, Chief of Staff. Get really hands-on exposure. I think it can help. But
it's a fair point. I just realized that most VC associates would also have worked, have done a maybe a global MBA or an Indian MBA and would have worked at some consulting firm.
Yeah.
Where they have not had the taste of
real operations.
Real or failures. I mean, yeah. Now it's very, Jensen Huang has now famously spoken about, I wish you a lot of pain and suffering. I think you've not seen pain and suffering. So one thing, if you've not had operating experience and you're in VC, is you've not seen pain and suffering. So in that, I would agree with
That's
you.
Well
that I would not, I mean, what he means by Series A chief of staff with Revanth is get pain and
real,
suffering.
Real pain and suffering. Let's see what the next question is. I understand starting up requires immense courage and a sprinkle of some delusion. I would say more than a sprinkle. Before the plunge, how do we really realistically stress test our own abilities and ideas? How did you do it? And maybe even refer to back to what the original starting idea was, whereas what it is today. And this is somebody who's in a phase where they are trying to formulate a vision deck of sorts and systematically formulate their thesis.
I think this is a tough one for me because I've had various stages of delusion across my career. I think it's good if you can build a personal board over time. People who will keep you honest. When I was starting out, because Dhyanesh was my co-founder and you know him, is very risk averse, very, very objective. He was very clear that, hey, we should raise money off the bat. In fact, you know, right, like Chirag at GoQuick was also supposed to be the founder. Like, so Hitesh at Killer, Chirag at GoQuick and Dhyanesh. I mean, again, that's a, I knew in the end I had to be an entrepreneur because these people would come and tell me, hey, let's start something, right? So when multiple people, I thought it's a midlife crisis, but turns out everybody's become an entrepreneur now, so clearly it was not. And these are individuals who believe that you have something that takes to succeed. So when, again, if you look at Chirag at GoQuick as well, or Dhyanesh, whenever I used to run ideas by them and said, ye kar sakte hai, they would just poke holes in it, right? So I always had these individuals. Even Hitesh at Killer, he was a big skeptic because he started 2010 to 2015. He had a failed, and failed founders become very pessimistic after a while. He had two failures. He's on his third startup now. And now I have to push him to be more optimistic, right? So you should surround yourself with people who can give you objective feedback, because in that delusion, you will sort of be on this almost self-fulfilling prophecy that, yaar, main kuch bhi kar lunga.
Yeah.
And I am like that. I need someone to tell me that, haan, but isme ye char risk hai. And over time, I have got better.
Yeah.
I think if I go back 6 years back, I think the idea is still the same, which we will build a house of brands. We've narrowed it down to obviously health and wellness. We've narrowed it down to digital. We've narrowed it down to supplements only. And we've kept narrowing it down because otherwise it's too confusing for an org. Everything goes, right?
Yeah.
So that maturity brings...
So for you, the answer is surround yourself with people who give you the reality check. But one of the most famous are, both of us, I'm sure, look up to him, entrepreneurs, Steve Jobs said, I don't listen to consumers, I don't listen to people, I will build and tell people what they want. How do you balance this?
The frustrating point for all, as you said, including my board and advisors, is while I say that surround yourself with people, it's good to hear a thought that would not come naturally to you. In fact, now I have gotten to a stage that, okay, if I say this, what would Avnish say? And I know what he'll say and I write it down, and when I meet him, I actually check whether I was right or wrong. And now with the world of AI, actually I have fed enough things of enough conversations to know what. So I think we are evolving to a level where I am able to learn how other people think, because you are a output of your nature and your nurturing, right? And therefore your context is different.
Yeah.
Now if I can feed that context into AI, so I'm saying actually you don't even need a personal board. Just get all the people you respect, learn how they think, feed it into GPT.
I think
or
what you just said, and it's amazing how similar we think in this, but what you just said, what you should be seeking out is the best answer, not your answer.
Yes.
And the best answer is basically a a synthesis of many answers which you should seek out.
Yeah.
And then reach your own answer.
Yeah.
And today ChatGPT can help you.
Or correct. I think it's much easier
and
now.
And mental model. Sorry. You said you also said something about think about how they think. By the way, I always have these mental models. What will my LPs think? What will my founders think with this decision? What will this person think? So I think that is very instructive for people.
Yeah, but the call still has to be yours because you have to, and as like they say, there's a very famous dialogue that founders have this ability to bend the universe and
reality distortion, and
stuff, right? It does happen. That's where your delusion comes in. But I think just to make sure that the probabilities of success are stacked in your favor, it's important to just get different viewpoints. Yeah, and if you can have that, I actually went and have always created a personal board of people where I am very clear on me knowing their incentives. Because in the end, why is someone thinking what they are thinking is far more important than what they are thinking and what they are saying.
Yeah.
And over time, the reason I now rely more on AI is because I don't need to worry about the why.
Yeah.
It gives a much more objective view because there's no incentive alignment that I have to worry about there.
Yeah. No, so just one, two other points on this. I only half joke with some entrepreneurs who play back this Steve Jobs statement to me. If you're Steve Jobs, fine, do it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, go ask your customers, go ask other people. And by the way, this point on trying to write down a vision deck is actually a great point. Writing down, debating with people really clarifies your own thought process.
Yeah.
And today, like you said, you can do a lot of it with AI.
Okay,
let's go to the next one.
Hi, my name is Somajit. I am a failed entrepreneur. So this question is to you. What would you choose between profitability or scale, especially at this age? Because when you guys founded it, it was a different era. Now it's a different era. So what do you think I should do?
Before you answer, Revant, I'm just so happy to see somebody come up and identify themselves as a failed entrepreneur. It's actually heartwarming.
Yeah.
Because it takes many shots. We all talk about learning from failures and learning from successes. So kudos for doing that. And I hope a lot more people do that. Profitability versus scale. I thought this is a topic of our board meeting.
See, it's a function of circumstances. In my journey, I raised money from three of the large best VCs in the country. So by design, the venture model is something that I understood that we had to go for scale. Now, if you're raising, let's say, because we are building consumer brands, if you're building a consumer brand and you've raised from a smaller fund, which effectively is a different thought process, they would prefer for you to build it profitably. And I'm not saying that my board or my investors don't want profitably. It's just that there's a very different model to scale. Or if you're not funded at all and you're bootstrapped, then you have to be profitable from day one, right? So I think it's a question of circumstances, to be honest. I have, in some way or form, I used to think that it is serendipity, but now I have realized, and Avnish has, to his credit, made me realize that I have constructed the cap table of individuals around me who sort of match my ambition and zeal to build something meaningful in size. And therefore, by design, we keep thinking growth much more over profitability. At some point of time, I'm sure if we have to list, then again, it's market decisions, right? But at least today, because we are still only 6 years into our journey, we still, of course, we are profitable, so that helps. But I would still keep optimizing because there's an opportunity that excites me, right? At some point of time, I keep it very simple. Even if you're profitable, if you don't see any more opportunities to grow, then it's obviously makes sense to become more and more profitable. But if I look at India today and I look at the next 10 years and I look at the platform that we have and the ability of this platform to actually accelerate growth, and I have like-minded investors who are saying, let's think 2047, then I have the luxury and the privilege to think scale more. And it's something that I feel we would be doing injustice to because not everybody gets this opportunity. So it's again very personal to how entrepreneurs think as well as the circumstances that you are in. If I go back to my rebel opportunity, we had to be profitable a lot sooner than what we ended up being. And it was not that the opportunity was not there. It was just that the business model was very different. And food being an anti-habit, like we are seeing food delivery now growing at 10-15% year on year, because Swiggy, Zomato sort of become the benchmark of how that market is growing. You can grow at 25%, but at that growth rate, you have to increase profitability as well. So
yeah.
It's a question of very simple, is the opportunity there? Have you built a platform? Do you have the team? Do you have the capital? And if you can grow 50-60%, 100%, then why not?
So I'll give a, first of all, thank you for the 2047 plug. If people don't know, Z47 is all about Viksit Bharat 2047. I'll give you VC speak for it. Scale as long as unit profitability is working. So at some point you do have to make money, you know, in passing, Revan just mentioned, oh, I can do this because I'm profitable. It is a very big deal. The scale at which this company became profitable was actually very, very ahead of plan. So don't lose sight of the unit economics. At some point, scale has to bring profitability. And then another point Revan just mentioned at the end, you know, your sources of capital, so on and so forth. You have to figure out how to finance your company. Either your customers will finance your company or you have to find other sources of financing. If you have to find other sources of financing, that will be one playbook. If your customers are financing, that could be the profitability playbook. So it really depends, but never lose sight of unit level profitability. But ultimately, a Kirana store is also profitable. So scale is also relevant. Let's take the last one, I think.
Hello, my name is Adarsh and I work in an investment bank. And I want to ask, is there a fundraising myth that the founders should unlearn fast?
It's a tough one. We should unlearn a myth.
I'll give it one shot as you think that the idea matters. I don't think the idea matters at all. I mean, as a VC, we had the, I don't know how many house of brands we would have met, probably not many, but when we met you guys as a team, it was a very easy answer.
Yeah.
So I think it is a...
I think I would still, maybe the nuance is because you as a firm maybe are more founder backwards. If I go back to my venture days, I was also more founder backwards than a market backwards. There are firms that are market backwards
true.
As well.
True.
But what is at least common between everyone is the founder market fit that people look at. And I think that is an unbreakable thing at every level. The founder market fit also applies at Series B, Series C, Series D. So maybe the myth, I actually think the biggest myth that has been sold to folks is that after a while it's only your numbers that matter in fundraising. It's not. Even at our scale today, people are like, I mean, Dipinder has proved that to the extent, right? Like, it doesn't matter what scale you are, how good your business model is. In the end, people, at least in India, are very clear that they want to see the founder running the business. There are instances where the businesses have scaled beyond founders, but at least today it still seems like I always thought that at some point of time we'll have professionals running the company. And for us, you know, growing up, Infosys or a TCS where what an ideal company looks like, right? Where founders sort of professionalize the teams and then the compounding still happens over the next 25-30 years. I think the markets and the world has changed, and especially with AI, I think we always needed agility, but with AI, the world and therefore consumer behavior is changing so fast. If you are not an agile founder, it's just hard to keep creating alpha. I think gone are the days where you could keep a business model running continuously without pivoting for 10-15 years. I think the market reality now is you have to do either a pivot or a 0-1 every 18-24 months, and which is a very close founder mindset. So I think
so
one
the
of the
myth is the teams and all this.
Teams are important, but teams also need to be agile. And see, it comes from the top, right? This culture of agility, unlearning, relearning is.
Yeah.
It's almost like we are always at wartime. There is no peacetime anymore. There is like it's a myth that there is peacetime.
Yeah.
Especially the pace at which AI is moving.
No, even
there
the
is
last
no
2 years, in fact, isn't Bezos also back? To some because you know, as the things were going,
it's scary almost how much
the company changed,
how much everything is changing and how fast.
Yeah.
I think there is no more peacetime. You know, I've heard this phrase somewhere, only the paranoid survive and founders
and
are by design. I think it's truer than ever.
I love being on the VC side of it because that's a tough way to live. Revan, last putting you on the spot, the audience, we have promised that it's as real, as humble, as funny. Any moments of deep, maybe questioning of yourself on this journey that you have had? Anything to share and any other advice in general?
No, I think, to be honest, it's everybody's presenting a face that works for the business, that works for that situation. Founders may always seem confident and people who are absolutely sure of themselves because there is no other option. You have to do that, right? Every single day. I don't know how many of the viewers here would have seen the Asymmetric podcast where for a year we just jammed, and I think that was the starting point of people realizing that even founders deeply are broken people and they stress about 20 things in a single day. Life's no different. We have personal lives where we are always trying to grapple personal versus professional time. We have professional lives where things are not hunky-dory. We have board members who are sometimes supportive, sometimes giving us grief.
Other board members are not supportive.
I think the journey is why you should do it. I don't think the stress or the risk reward of a good job versus entrepreneurship, because I get this the most, right? Don't do it unless you are genuinely ready for a journey. And at the end of the journey, whatever happens, whether you create a small company, large company, whether you go list or don't list, you have to make peace with the fact that you are in it because you enjoy doing it. I think a lot of people in the last 15 years have not answered that singular question as to why am I doing what am I doing. It is a hard question to answer. It took me also a lot of time. But once you get that, I think there is less stress and anxiety generally about the outcomes. I mean, the score will be what it is. But it's foolhardy to assume that we have all the answers. Luckily, if you find a personal or a professional, like I have my board where I get the reverse grief saying that, you know, you keep saying there are 20 problems, but we don't see the problem in the numbers. But it's still my mind, right? I need someone to speak to and talk to about my anxieties, which is healthy, I think. I think find a healthy bunch of folks who you can trust, who you can be open with, who you can be yourself with. I think that's the biggest thing that's important in any journey in entrepreneurship.
Super. Thank you. I will end every episode with a guest by giving you one trait as a founder that makes them different from the other ones. And which I believe at the end of it, by the way, you'll have like 100 traits, so you'll have to figure out which ones to pick. But with him, it's growth mindset. No two discussions over some period of time, let's say 6 months apart. First of all, they're all very deep. And second of all, they're all about a new topic of growth after the previous one has been solved. So kudos. I think you really epitomize growth mindset, which is a necessary trait for great founders. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
You're watching Z47 Moments, the podcast by India's oldest venture capital firm, Z47. If you like this episode, consider hitting the subscribe button and the bell icon so you never miss an update from Z47 Moments.